From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, the hunting of the 20th century America with Bill Burns and Joel Martin. Get ready for that as we start kicking off Halloween week into next Monday, where we will have Ghost to Ghost for you right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, that big German spacecraft made an uncontrolled fall from the sky. The Rosat re-entered the Earth's atmosphere over the weekend, just as NASA's SARS satellite, which plunged into the atmosphere in September. There was high uncertainty about the final moments of this one, but if the timings are correct, the wreckage would probably have dived, they think, into the Indian Ocean, although no eyewitnesses have come forward yet. If anything, it did manage to hit anything on land. They say it would have been some part of China, but that's all they know. Well, it could be the first official report of the tsunami debris from the Japanese tornado and the earthquake that struck out there. It is now nearing Hawaii. A new report coming from a Russian spaceship say that researchers are looking at the debris as it floats toward Hawaii, and we're talking about 5 to 20 million tons of debris. Rescue teams in Turkey are continuing to search for people trapped under rubble after a strong earthquake hit the eastern region on Sunday. Right now, 279 people have died, 1,140 injured in the 7.2 magnitude quake. Stan Deo, who monitors earthquakes, he's with us. Stan, I have a feeling there's more to come. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. It's interesting. I've been following the quakes that have been occurring over in the southern Pacific region along the ring of fire on the western side, southwestern side near Australia. Over the past week, we've seen quakes in the north of New Zealand. It was about a 7.4 in the Kermadec Islands region, and it followed one that was over in areas where we normally get severe earthquakes in the island of Papua New Guinea. There was a 6.0 there on the 18th. Jeez. Now it's moving along an old tectonic plate line that goes over through the Himalayas and over into Turkey. I did find it strange that Turkey is not accepting any international aid. It kind of makes you wonder what's going on there. But
that is strange.
I mean, Israel was first one there saying, let us help, you know. But I'm seeing the quake activity increasing all over the planet. And if you looked at a map of the area of Turkey and east of there toward India, if you looked at the ocean map, the bathymetry, you'll see that something a long, long time ago caused India to be ripped off of North Africa and shoved up to make the Himalayas. And it's a very fragile, like fault line filled tectonic plate area all along the Himalayas and then down into Iran, into the Persian Gulf, and up into Turkey. Biblical prophecy even mentions that we're going to see a huge earthquake, a bunch of earthquakes, but one really big one, bigger than we've ever seen on the planet before here in this age. So I'm watching all this stuff. I think it's quite prophetic.
Stan's website, Stan Deo, DEYO.com. And again, he monitors these, as does Jim Berklin, our geologist. Afghanistan would support Pakistan in case of military conflict between Pakistan and the United States, according to the Afghan president, Hamid Karzai, in an interview to a private Pakistani television. The remarks were in sharp contrast to recent tension between the two neighbors over cross-border raids and Afghan accusations that Pakistan was involved in killing the chief Afghan peace envoy. Craig Hewlett, of course, who's been a speechwriter in Congress and also heads up his own consultancy company. He's with us. Craig, was this just rhetoric? Was he saying that for Pakistani TV, or does he really mean it?
No, I think at the time he did mean it, and what he really did say is he referred to Pakistan in a sense that in Muslim countries it's very meaningful. He referred to Pakistan, "You are our brother." So if they were to go to war with America, we would stand by our brother. So even though he's come back later and his office has said that he was misinterpreted, I don't think he was misinterpreted at all. He went so far as to add that terminology to it. He was making a statement, I think, in part because there's two Taliban. I don't think the American people have really come to grips with this yet. There's two Taliban groups. One is Afghanistan Taliban, and the other are Taliban that are operate out of Pakistan. They are, in essence, one and the same thing. They're all from the same clans, the same tribes. And Pakistan has long backed the Taliban, both against the communists when the Soviets were there, and they still, Pakistan's military is directly involved in assisting cross-border raids backing both Taliban against America. So America's got a real problem on its hands, and Afghanistan will draw everybody into a conflict if there is any greater expansion by the U.S. or Iran into those regions.
There's no doubt. Now, is the rhetoric about going to war with Pakistan real, or is this something we're just starting to hear?
No, in essence, you know, we've been not only cross-border raids in Pakistan, we've got ground troops in Pakistan. We've done dozens and dozens of drone strikes on Pakistani turf. And the Pakistan government has warned us off and told us to stop it. They have even confronted our troops on occasion. We haven't gotten into a shooting war with them at this point. But we are encroaching on Pakistan territory under the guise of chasing terrorists and or Taliban that are crossing back into Pakistan. But I think the thing is coming apart. I think really what Harmid Karzai was doing is starting to come apart. The whole world is now well informed on what the U.S. and NATO has done in Libya. There are protests and riots going on right now in Pakistan that aren't being covered in the Western press over what we've done in Libya and what the Libyan Transitional Council did to the bodies of Muammar Gaddafi and his sons. And it's now very clear. Some of the people that we claimed were heads of Al-Qaeda are in the Transitional Council front lines. They are now the governing body. People that we say were chasing and killing Al-Qaeda terrorists in one part of the Arab world, in North Africa, were backing them and killing other Arabs and Muslims in a different part of the world. So our program for the war on terror is flat out coming apart.
Craig, thank you for your insight. Craig Hewlett, his website, part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. We're giving you breaking news. We're giving you perspective that you don't hear anyplace else. In Mansfield, Ohio, a Mansfield dentist is offering cash and prizes in exchange for sweets. That's right. The Halloween trick-or-treaters can bring their excess candy to the office of Craig Callen in Mansfield, receive $1 per pound. That's a 5-pound limit per kid. And get free toothbrushes as well. There will also be a drawing for two free children's bikes. Callen, with the support of his associates, will provide up to $1,000 total. Well, pretty novel idea. He's getting a lot of publicity for it, too. Paranormal Activity 3 didn't just go bump in the night. It made a ton of noise at the box office with a record-setting $54 million at its opening. The third film in the Paramount Pictures low-budget Fright franchise, which was number one at the box office, had the biggest debut ever for a horror movie, according to the Sunday studio estimates. It broke the previous record Part 2 set a year ago at $40 million. It's also the biggest opening ever for an October release. A story that you will see under the name of Peter Davenport and also in the news at coasttocoastam.com, a video of an alien in the Amazon rainforest taken by two British tourists has now gone viral on YouTube. It appears to show a small alien-like creature standing next to a tree in the Amazon jungle. The video was obtained by a paranormal writer, Michael Cohen, and is believed to have been filmed by two British tourists visiting the Amazon jungle. Peter Davenport, of course, who heads up the UFO Reporting Center, National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, what do you think of this video? Peter is not there. Peter, you with us? Nope, Peter Davenport is not with us. Well, okay. In a moment, by the way, we are going to be back with, of course, Mark Lerner, astrologer, as we talk about things that are going to affect our future right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Astrologer Mark Lerner, he's one of the best, and he's with us right now on Coast to Coast AM as we're going to be talking about events that will shape our future for the not-too-distant future. Mark Lerner, back on Coast to Coast AM. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you, George. Great to be here.
Always a pleasure. Interesting times these days, Mark.
Yes, across the board.
So, astrologically, what's going on?
Well, one of the things I've been studying is really fascinating, gets the ball rolling tonight. We sent a spacecraft, which is orbiting Vesta by NASA. It's called Dawn, D-A-W-N. It's been there since July. It took 4 years to get to Vesta. And Vesta, in astrology, rules housing, including the housing industry. It rules, very importantly, safety and security, not just of individuals, but national, international safety and security. And not just think about borders and whether or not we're protected in terms of terrorism, but think cyber terrorism, cyber security. And it rules the international investment community. And what I've written about is when we sent the Voyager 2 missions way back in the 80s, remember mm-hmm. those days?
I sure do.
Okay, when Voyager 2, this is part of astrology, as above, so below, what's true in the cosmos becomes reflected in truth on Earth and in humanity. It's one of the most ancient forms of astrology, attributed to the ancient Egyptian Hermes Trismegistus. And so we get this idea of whatever's happening in the cosmos gets reflected on Earth. So we send these amazing spacecraft, and Voyager 2 flies by the planet Uranus, the first of the outer planets, and starts taking pictures in late January of 1986. And a couple of days later, the Challenger explodes. And we were all totally shocked. Yes. Well, that planet Uranus that we were now taking pictures of back in 86, when we have this explosion of the Challenger, that planet rules aviation, it rules shocks, it rules everything that connects up to that particular event. So on Earth, we have this devastating event. Everybody is startled. The whole program is unsettled. Then 3 years later, the same Voyager 2 passes by the planet Neptune, which we discovered in 1846. And Neptune has so much to do with communism and socialism in the political world, and it also has to do with things like everything that's globally financial and many other things, spiritual, religion, and so on. Well, it's in the summer and the fall of 1989, when the Voyager 2 is snapping pictures of Neptune, that the Berlin Wall falls and Germany becomes reunited and the Romanian dictator Ceausescu is executed by his people, and it begins the fall of the Soviet Union and hardline communism. So what's happening here, George, is this is something that's sort of unrecognized by all of us, that we've now, and it's so many years later, we're talking 25 years after Challenger exploded back in 86, and we took pictures of the first of the outer planets. We now have this amazing spacecraft, and NASA and all the scientists are incredibly excited ever since July, when after 4 years, we are now taking closer pictures of this asteroid to try and determine origins of the solar system, things like gravity, electromagnetic energy, mm-hmm. what the soil is composed of, because they're trying to figure out how we all got here billions of years ago. But what they don't realize is that on Earth, we're now having the European sovereign debt crisis. We're having our own debt ceiling crisis. Everything is in tumult. All the markets are volatile. Nobody knows what's going on, including the economists.
Mark, this planet Uranus, was it around when the Japanese earthquake and tsunami hit in March?
Oh yeah. Earlier this year, when I was on the show in January, the last thing that I was asked was, do you have a date that you want to come up with about a prediction? That was late January. I said March 11. And the reason I said March 11 that we need to watch for was that planet, the first of the outer planets, Uranus. Some people call it Uranus, whatever. whatever the actual naming, it's the ancient Titan sky god above even Jupiter and Saturn. It goes way back into ancient mythology, even connects up to Atlantis. That planetary energy that has that name, on March 11th, entered the first degree, the zero point in astrology, which is sort of connected to this, all the zero point energy that you all talk about,
mm-hmm.
you know, in physics. Well, in astrology, we have our zero point. It's the beginning of the zodiac, and it always happens March 20th to March 21. That's when the sun reaches that point, but the Uranian planet reached it on March 11th, and exactly on that day, unfortunately, Japan was hit by the earthquake and the tsunami, but even more so, that knocked out the three nuclear facilities, and the Uranian energy rules uranium and radiation when it's negative. And so that March 11th date is totally connected to that planet. And guess what? This is the other thing. The Arab Spring and the Occupy Wall Street, all of these liberation, freedom marches, all of this stirring up in the political world, we want our freedoms around the world, and even in America, it's all connected because on the first day of spring, 10 days after the March 11th event, where the Japan events were kind of a precursor, let's see them as a kind of appetizer, and what's to come. And then 9 to 10 days later, the sun, the most powerful force, of course, in the solar system, and Uranus, they merge. And guess what? It's the closest merger at a springtime in 355 years. We have to go all the way back to about 10 years before the Declaration of Independence, 100 years before. It goes back to about 1676 was the last time that we had a spring that was that powerful. And that's way before, of course, everything, radio, industry, everything. So the last time we had anything was before people were having this kind of level of communication.
Mark, what's on step for celestial alignments that could influence us over the next couple of years?
Well, that the same planet, Uranus, is in Aries, the first sign, and Pluto moving even more slowly, the outermost planet's in Capricorn. What they're doing is they're going to be I'm an eternal optimist. I always tend to think of the most positive things, looking at mundane astrology, people's charts, whatever it is I'm confronted with, having done this for 40 years. But we have something that we haven't been faced with since the Great Depression, and that's that these two outer planets, Uranus and Pluto, will square each other, will make a right angle in the heavens, and what we call a 90-degree angle, which is considered frictional intense, seven times, and it's going to start in June of 2012, couple months before the election, before the Mayan calendar is supposed to end, and it lasts all the way to March of 2015. So we got seven of these things that go back and forth, and it's kind of like if you looked on a graph, one of the stock market graphs or something like that, you see these extreme volatile ups and downs. We're going to have not just 7 days over about 3 years, but there's always a buildup of at least a week or two before, a week or two after, of extreme volatility all around the world.
Mark, how does this series of events tie into the celestial movements? How do they affect each other?
Well, okay, the one thing that most people have a problem with in either absorbing astrology, trying to understand it, is it really isn't that Saturn, let's say, out there is sending some kind of energy
right.
that would make somebody fall down a flight of stairs. Like in traditional astrology, medical astrology, we know that Saturn is connected to bones and the skeletal system. And generally speaking, let's say, in fact, in my own life, when I was 3 and a half, I fell in a nursery school and I broke my leg. And so that would be a Saturnian event. In my birth chart, the sun and Saturn had an orb or an alignment of 3 and a half. And so it happened when I was 3 and a half. So when astrologers look at a person's chart, they'll look at cycles and distances very scientifically and very mathematically. But what it is, George, is that it's the archetype. Like Saturn has all these functions, fear, focus, structure, authority, leadership, down the line. Jupiter will have a whole series of things. And so when astrologers look at all this and they're looking at alignments, everything that has all these weird names and all the astrologies, what's really happening is these are energies that are part of every person's aura. It's part or electromagnetic field. The whole chart, like when somebody puts down a horoscope wheel for George Norrie or Mark Lerner or anybody else, and you see all these planets and it looks like a bunch of gobbledygook, it's really something. It's kind of like a Rosetta Stone, like an Egyptian hieroglyphics. But it really can be easily translated because each of these planets has a series of meanings. The signs of the zodiac, all 12, they're all in everybody's chart. You're, you know, a person's not just a Gemini or Pisces. You have all the signs, and you have to diagnose all the planets. And after a while, I mean, you got to put energy. It's like learning French or Spanish or any kind of language. You don't walk in the first day and you're a know-it-all. You got to learn the translations, the idioms. You got to work on the language. And the same thing with astrology. But you can take astrology and look at anything. Any event, anything that begins, a country, a car company, a person, this evening, talking and sharing through the radio, that has a chart for a sky pattern that will explain what we're talking about, why we're talking about it.
I got to tell you, Mark, it's fascinating. Stick around. I've got more questions for you, and we're going to take phone calls with Mark Lerner, the astrologer, right here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie. We'll be right back. And next hour, Bill Burns and Joel Martin join Coast to Coast here as we talk about The Haunting of 20th Century America. It's a bestseller and it's an exciting story indeed. Hey, are you a member of the Coast Insiders Club? Well, you should be. For less than 25 cents a day, you get all these incredible little side benefits, downloading and podcasting. Matter of fact, I was talking to a guy today who said, look, I go to work at 7 in the morning, George. I can't stay awake at night to listen to your show. And I went, gosh, that's unfortunate. But he said, but I'm a Coast Insider, and so I podcast it, and I get it all the time, and I listen to it. And I said, that's great, and that's what it's all about. So you can be a Coast Insider. You simply go to coasttocoastam.com. Right there at the top, you click Coast Insider, and there you go. You fill it out. It's less than 25 cents a day. Now, when we come back in just a moment, Mark Lerner will continue chatting with us about astrology, and we'll take your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, we're with astrologer Mark Lerner. Mark, as we get into the presidential election in 2012, any candidates there who have the upper hand, astrologically speaking? I can barely hear you too, Mark, so we might have to call you back, and we'll take some calls when we do that. Okay, and let's. Anyways, let me go to Dale in Wisconsin. And Dale, let's pick up your question here and your thoughts. Go ahead, Dale.
Hi, George.
Hey, good to have you with us.
Thank you. I'm a first-time caller.
Okay, well, good. Mark can barely hear you. He won't be able to answer you right now, but I will. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm kind of curious because 11 years ago, maybe going on 12 years, I married a gal from California, and she moved out here with me. And since then, I've noticed things about the moon, and I've been hearing about this guy, your guest you have on the radio show with you. And I'm almost certain there's something with the moon and the way it puts an effect on people, because, you know, she's from California, which is quite a far away. I mean, it's like 2,000 miles away from me. And when she moved here, I noticed changes in her. And so my question is to your guest is, would that or can that happen?
Well, there is no doubt, Dale, that astrologically speaking, these planets and these alignments have effects on people. And now this change that you've seen in her, what specific things have happened for you to think that?
Well, her actions, the way she wants to perceive things. When we're out there, when I say out there, I'm saying California. When we go out there to visit, her moods change, her actions change. I mean, everything changes. I mean, from everything that the way she eats to the way that her thinking process is. And I'm sure she sees the difference in me too, but she doesn't realize it. But when we get back over here, of course, we're higher elevation, of course, and it seems that there again, it switches back to an odd cycle that I call it.
Okay, Mark, let's go to you and let me ask you something. So Dale has a friend, a very close friend, who he has seen an incredible change. And will celestial events affect somebody's personality like that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's what we call our transits and our progressions. Any professional astrologer is constantly watching. I mean, depending on how much work they do for a client, you can use the natal chart. The natal horoscope determines a lot of personality and how you grow up. You can compare the person's birth chart to the parents' charts, any siblings, things like that. But you're watching the movement of planets, celestial bodies, by several different techniques that can show deep changes in people's personality, major events, those kind of things throughout time.
And with this election coming up in 2012, any of the candidates have any advantage astrologically speaking?
Well, the president does have certain advantages over the rivals, although from what part of the thing is you got to get the time, as long as assuming we now actually have the actual birth time for President Obama. As I heard that in the last 24 hours, Governor Perry and Donald Trump are still talking that out, whether it's the true birth certificate. But assuming that's true, he does have some advantages having to do with a study that was done a long time ago by a really fantastic astrologer who watched Roosevelt's elections in the 1930s. And it was it has to do with where Saturn's moving up in the chart. And so President Obama will have Saturn moving toward the top of his chart. Now, on the other hand, I have looked at Romney's chart, and certain things in his configurations, and even Governor Perry, if he gets back on track, they do have some potentials, which is why they're in the race. What's interesting is both Perry and Romney are both sun sign Pisces, and recently they've been fighting with each other tremendously. And very often, the old physics law likes repel. The opposites attract, but when you have the same energy, too much of the same energy, there's a repellent, and that's what we're seeing with Romney and Perry squawking at each other.
Let's go to Anson in Queens, New York. Welcome to the show, Anson. You're on with Mark Lerner.
Hi. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Hey. I had a question regarding the astrological signs. I see a lot of things pertaining to signs of the season starting to take effect leading up to the winter and next year. But my question is regarding 2012, next year. Astrologically, what do you see coming for, like, spring, March, April?
Oh, well, I mean, I personally don't necessarily just focus on a particular month unless something is coming up as a major event. So I would not be the person who would, say, focus on a particular sun sign or not. But, for instance, from the financial viewpoint, just for everybody listening, we're on one level, for instance, based on Venus and Mercury, we're right now in a bearish market. You wouldn't be able to tell by the stock market, the Dow Jones, in the last, say, 5 days or 4 days because it's gone up. Yeah. What will happen often is a planet right now, like Jupiter, is in the sign of Taurus, which is money, and is crossing a strategic position in the chart for the New York Stock Exchange. So we get into a very scientific kind of thing if we're looking at things financially. The one thing I could tell this person, though, we're going to have Mars and Venus next year are both going to go retrograde, which doesn't often happen. Mars, when it goes retrograde, which it'll happen from around January 24th, all the way through April 14th. That's a good chunk of time. Mars going retrograde. People are less sure of themselves. Leadership is, again, kind of lacking. There are questions about power and will and passion. So there's a reflection period that needs to happen between late January into February and March and for parts of April that have a lot to do with men and just initiative and drive. It also affects women. And then later in the summer, Venus goes retrograde in the middle of June, and that'll happen for 6 weeks in the summer of 2012. So it'd actually go on from about May 14 through late June that women will need to reevaluate, particularly emotions, feelings, relationships. And we don't often get the planets Venus and Mars going retrograde in the same year.
All right, let's go to Joan Marie in British Columbia, Canada. Hey, Joan Marie, welcome.
First-time caller after all these years.
Well, good for you.
Excited and blessed to be able to talk with you. I have a question as to, I'm new to this astrological stuff, but I have searched for my biological mom for 45 years and found her and wanted to know how, and she's in the process of dying right now with cancer, and I wanted to know what sickness, what cancer and things like that do, or an earlier death, how that affects the astrological chart in the rest of the family.
Well, when I've investigated, there's a whole area of medical astrology that goes back thousands of years in almost every culture that uses astrology, which is most of them. And so we've learned a whole lot about things like illness. What usually happens is, first of all, if one knows the charts of a variety of family members, like you just found your biological mom, so in your chart, in other, say, if you have siblings, other family members, then we would see the new moon, the full moon, eclipses, certain major events. If they start hitting your charts, including your mother's chart, to hitting specific planets, that might indicate that the death is near or that the illness is getting worse. So what the astrologer is looking for, the key thing is the more exact the alignments of things like a new moon or a full moon to certain planets like Pluto or Saturn or Mars or even the Sun, it depends on how the chart is and who you're looking at. But let's put it this way. At the time of any person's passing, like we just had Steve Jobs leave the scene, I was trying to figure out when did he die, what time of day, because just as we come in and we're born and we have a horoscope, and that indicates what we're trying to achieve. It's kind of like our spiritual genetic code. And at the exact moment of death, even though it's a morbid subject, nobody wants to die, it's a terrible kind of a thing. Sure. At the exact moment that a person passes away, they're basically the chart for that moment is also saying, here's what I accomplished in this life. This is the meaning of my life. So the moment of passing is very significant. And of course, in a lot of cultures, they do many different ceremonies in order to make the passing more positive on a spiritual level and all of those kind of things.
Mark, people are always interested in their own love affairs, their own relationships. I mean, if you meet somebody, is it weird to ask them their charts and their dates and things like that?
I don't think it is at all, but here's the problem. I think the one area where I think most people usually respond favorably, even if they don't believe in it. Unfortunately, it's the people that I've seen in life who, if they're religious, okay, and there's something in their religion that says astrology is inappropriate or horoscopes are wrong or, you know, because in other words, whether it's a Christian Bible or the Quran or the Old Testament, whatever religion, if there's something in there that says, here's where you should be getting your guidance, you shouldn't be getting it from the stars or the planets or the configuration, it's that kind of person who might look at you and say, what, you're into astrology? How could you possibly believe in that kind of stuff? But what they don't realize is that it's really a mathematical, logical, I mean, the work that I do, I loved mathematics going through school. If I had not loved math and science and geometry, I'd never have done this, George. This is, to me, the most fantastic scientific, mathematical type of work that I could ever do. And I just love doing it because it's as if there was a groove and I fit into it.
Well, you do it with a passion, Mark, and that's so important. Sean and Louisville, Kentucky, you're up with us. Sean, go ahead.
Hey, how are you guys doing? George.
Great.
Excellent.
Great.
Excellent. Love your show. Mark, hello. How are you doing?
Okay, great.
I had a really quick question. It's actually followed by a sub-question. But anyways, I seem to be surrounded by people who continuously follow their horoscopes and the alignments of the stars and the solstices and everything like that. I totally enjoy it, and I can get with it, but my question is ultimately is how are so many masses completely captivated by the alignment of the stars? And why is this so prevalent?
Well, we all want to know about destiny and fate. I mean, at our hearts, I think that that's absolute. Why are we here? Where are we going?
Mm-hmm.
Every person we meet, as George was just saying, you never know what's going to happen with every single person, every friend you have. So I think it's just human curiosity. But the other thing is, when we get away from the idea of the smog and the cities, I mean, we have to be thankful for our brothers and sisters of the ancient world. I mean, when they gazed up at the stars, we know that you could go back to Mesopotamia, Babylonia, Chaldea, places we don't even know anything about, I mean, except for the mythologies and the museums. And they were watching Jupiter-Saturn conjunctions every 20 years, and we know we can go back to like 700 BC because they didn't have television, they didn't have radio, they didn't have book reading. The sky was the show, and shooting stars and comets. Of course, they didn't know everything, but because they would keep looking in the heavens for decade after decade and passing on their information, eventually, all these different cultures have given us what we have. And now, luckily, we have the software and all these other things. And also, people's intuition is growing and our ability to communicate now with things like cell phones and satellites and computers. So I think everything combining is making people even more aware of what's my destiny? And if astrology as a horoscope can tune me in, I'm all for it.
Good point. Bonnie's in Hawaii. Hey, Bonnie, go ahead.
Aloha, George.
You
Aloha,
too.
Mark.
Aloha.
And George, I love your show. I have a question. I am a Capricorn, and I have most of my relationships in my adult life have been close relationships with Leos. Mm-hmm. And I have been noticing in the past year a big, big change in the relationship with Leos. And I'm really confused about it. There's been a huge change.
Well, what would happen is, if you have an astrologer or if you can study up on it, read more about your full chart, your sun being a Capricorn means the sun is in Capricorn, but the moon, for instance, in most people's charts is as equal in power to the sun. The moon has a lot to do with, say, personality. Now, I don't know where Leo would show up in your chart, but it does show up somewhere. And for each person, you just happen to draw that sign, possibly because you're an earth sun sign and Leo is fire. Therefore, earth needs fire in a certain capacity. But one would have to look at the other planets in your chart, then have to look at the time and figure out, okay, where are these movements taking place in what house, above, below, rising or setting, and what's going on the chart. And that's the only way one could actually give a really easy answer or an appropriate answer to your question. Right at this moment, it's not as if there are a lot of planetary movements in Leo, except right now Mars is there, which is interesting because Mars represents men and the male energy, and over the last couple of weeks, Mars has been in Leo, and then it will eventually shift out in a couple of weeks. Maybe when it shifts out into Virgo, which is Earth, some of these disturbances or changes will simmer down.
Mark, give us a quick primer for people who don't know much about astrology but would like to. What do they do?
Well, somebody can email me. I can give them some titles, some names of the great authors. People, I can just throw out a couple, Dane Rudyard, whose last name is a little bit hard to spell, but you can eventually figure it out, Dr. Mark Edmund Jones. These were two people who actually taught each other or worked with each other. They were two of the great American astrologers and teachers of the 20th century. And there are other people like Evangeline Adams and Charles Carter. If you go to the original books, that's one thing. I've studied all these people. I created a lot of classes. I mean, people can go to my website, of course, and there's such a profusion of websites out there on astrology all over the place. I feel always grateful to be able to share with the folks. And I was wondering, George, from another standpoint, what would you have done if Detroit was playing St. Louis in the World Series? Were you ready for that?
Depends on what city I'm in when they're playing. But
I was thinking
you know, it's a boy thing, Mark. You know, when you grow up with a sports team, that's what it is. And I love the Cardinals. They do a great job. They're behind Texas.
Right.
But it's a boy thing. So I'm a Detroit Tigers, Lions, Pistons, Red Wings fan. Always will be.
Just so you know, in closing, from my standpoint, even sports, one of the things you can even do for the guys out there, too, you can actually create charts for any game where you have a home team versus the other team and set up a chart, if an astrologer is that proficient, and mark out the planets to gain a sense of who's likely to win the game based on what's rising, setting above and below.
Give us your websites, Mr. Lerner.
Oh, okay. Well, it's Earth Aquarius News. Or Mark Lerner Astrology with the W's in front and the .coms at the end.
And you've got a couple books out too, don't you?
Well, I used to do Welcome to Planet Earth, which was a magazine for 20 years. And if people go on the front and on the left side, they'll see all the snippets of things, all the little stories. And then if they decide they want something further, they can look into a subscription and sure. Where there are vast numbers of stories on the inside of Welcome to Earth Aquarius News.
Okay, Mark, we're going to track some of the things you've told us. And next hour, Bill Burns and Joel Martin come in just a few moments now as we talk about the haunting of 20th century America on Coast to Coast AM.